Hi, listeners. Matt here. Just a quick note before the podcast to say that the following episode was initially recorded as an exclusive for our Patreon platform. Now, since it's been roughly 2 years since we started Patreon, Rich and I feel sufficient time has passed for those episodes over the coming weeks and months to now be rolled out on iTunes, on Spotify, on Deezer, on Castbox, or anywhere else where you may listen to your podcasts. The recording is from a while back, so please be aware some references are outdated. However, we still believe plenty of goalkeeping goodness remains in order for you to enjoy it just the same. So, yeah, enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Richard. Deep diving again. Every podcast we do at the moment, we say, oh, we've done a bit of a deep dive into X, Y, and Z. This time, it's into psychology, which we always tend to deep dive into, but we've got a specialist on the line.
We have one of the best in the business, it's fair to say, Mr. Dan Abrahams. I think most listeners will probably know his name. I mean, he's written several books. A lot have read Soccer Tough. I know that from a lot of people I speak to. Lots of people have read that book. Someone that I've known actually for quite a period of time and somebody that I know has done brilliant work with a lot of Premier League footballers, Championship footballers. So this particular interview, where we talk psychology and we talk about it with goalkeepers, goalkeeper coaches and people in and around the goalkeeping world, because it is such a big part of goalkeeping, we just thought, why not? Something a little bit different. Get an actual sports psychologist, a top-level sports psychologist, to give their take. And, of course, we've had the interview already. He really does go into some interesting ideas and actually gives quite a few simple ideas. I think you guys listening in, there's going to be a few things that you'll be able to take away. Real simple ideas you can take away that you'll be able to use, tools that you'll be able to use straight away.
Yep. Okay. Without further ado, over to Dan Abrahams. This week's guest provides yet another first on this very podcast. He, Richard, is not a goalkeeper. He's not a goalkeeper coach, and nor has he ever played the game. However, he is a world-renowned sports psychologist helping people perform. He's the author of four best-selling sports psychology books, the founder of both the Dan Abrahams Soccer Academy and the Sports Psych Show podcast, and he was once even a pro golfer. Dan Abrahams, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Very, very happy, honoured, in fact, to be here. And just to slightly correct you, I was goalkeeper for my under-10s team. And I led in, we played a local school, home and away, and we lost 8-1, 8-0. So I led in 16 goals. It's improved since then. I once went in goal for a five-a-side team when I was at university, and we only led in 6 goals. So I have a rich and strong history of performing exceptionally well in goal. So I'm delighted and honoured to be on your podcast, extolling the virtues of how to be a great goalkeeper.
Well, there you go. You see, I love the fact that now you're going to be able to speak from experience now that you've told us that. But actually, what I love more is the fact that Matt didn't know this. Because Dan, Matt prides himself on digging through the archives and finding out things that you didn't even know about yourself. But the fact that he's missed that you were a goalkeeper at under 10 level, that's made me incredibly happy already.
I mean, it's well, a stretch.
I'm pleased I bucked the trend.
Well, Dan, it's great to have you on. Like I said before, when we've spoken, when we've delved into psychology and the mental side of being a goalkeeper, this tends to switch over to Richard and I just let him and the guest chew the fat about all things goalkeeping and goalkeeping mentality. I think, Richard, that's going to be the same here.
It will do. Well, normally we start with our quickfire questions, which aren't necessarily going to work, although they might, Dan. So our quickfire questions normally are, what's your favourite pair of goalkeeper gloves? What's the best save you've ever made? And what's your favourite kit? So I don't know if you want to just start by answering any of those questions from that under-10s appearance, that 8-0 drubbing. Do you remember the brand of gloves?
I don't even think I actually wore gloves at that time. I went quite old school. So I don't think I wore gloves, but clearly any glove associated with you, Rich, works with me. Second question, best save I've ever made is when I came careering out. It was 1v1 and I managed to get a foot to it and clear my lines. Nice. You know, one for the history books, that one. And any kit in orange. How about that?
There you go.
Does that work?
Oh, and that might lead nicely into the psychological side of goalkeeping and the colour of kits and whether that has any impact on strikers. I'm sure we'll touch on that at some point further down the line. But yeah, look, this is one that I'm a conversation that I've been really looking forward to and fascinated about, because, you look, I'm so intrigued by psychology in general, but the psychology, the mindset of goalkeepers, and watching the very best goalkeepers, how they operate, their body language, how they pick themselves up from mistakes. And more often than not, where you see these goalkeepers that maybe are playing at League One, League Two level, and you don't see a lot differently in terms of their technique from a Premier League goalkeeper, but you sometimes ask, why has a goalkeeper maybe not got to that particular level? So yeah, I want to delve deep and find out your thoughts, firstly, generally on a goalkeeper's mindset, but then go a little bit deeper and a little bit more specific in terms of in-game situations, out-game, out-of-game situations, just to see if you're able to maybe offer a bit of advice for the many young goalkeepers that listen into this show, listening to this podcast on a week-to-week basis. So, I mean, I want to start just generally, because you obviously do work with a lot of players, young and old, and I'm assuming that you've worked with many goalkeepers in the past. Is there a difference for you in terms of the mentality of a goalkeeper and an outfield player?
Oh, interesting question. I mean, I suppose to lay the scene here a little bit, I mean, I've been a sports psychologist for just over 15 years, and, you know, 15 years of, I think Matt in the introduction mentioned my background as a pro golfer. So about 15 years ago, I started to get involved with non-league football because I knew golf like the back of my hand, and I really wanted to specialize. I am giving you this background for a reason, because I just like the listener to get a feel for what I've done and where I've been, and that might help a bit. About 15 years ago, I decided I really wanted to, yes, specialize in golf, but also specialize in football. I think as a sports psychologist, you clearly can work across all sports, and I have, and I still do. But I really felt that, you know, as a sports psychologist, it's good to learn the language and the specific challenges that players face in a specific sport. So I started to get involved in non-league football here in England about 15 years ago. And I think from the off, really, when I started to deliver some presentations to non-league clubs, and I got involved at a club called Fisher Athletic, if you remember them. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple of good goalkeepers there, and I was constantly working with them. I just think from the off, it always seemed like whenever I delivered a presentation or a facilitation at a club, the goalkeepers would be some of the first players to come up to me and start having a conversation. And I think that's because of the nature of the position. It almost feels like a game within a game. It almost feels like an individual sport within a team sport. And I suppose you could say that football can be an individual sport within a team sport across the pitch. But I think the goalkeeper is very much in that position where it probably feels like that the most. You're the last man standing, etc. And, one could argue that it's the most pressurized on the pitch in that respect. And then the way that goalkeepers tend to train, and we can talk about the tendency to train isolated. We can talk about whether that's good, whether that's bad a bit later, I'm sure. But the way goalkeepers train, it does tend to be unique. And so again, I think that leads to interesting conversation. So what I found is that, you know, goalkeepers have tended to orient towards me more than any other player or any other position on the pitch. It feels often, a broad brush statement here, it feels often that they are the most inquisitive and the most curious around the mental side of the game. And again, I just think it comes back to that unique position that they're in. So I've certainly over the last 15 years done a lot of work, whether it's at clubs I've consulted at, whether it's with individuals who have contacted me or coaches who have contacted me for their goalkeepers, or even agents who have contacted me to work with their goalkeepers. You know, I've worked with a lot of goalkeepers over the years, and I've certainly enjoyed working with them. So I'm not sure if I've answered your question, because I've completely forgotten what it was, but I just wanted to lay down a bit of the landscape and say, yeah, look, I work with a lot of goalkeepers.
Yeah, no, you have. You've answered it. And actually, it's interesting that you mentioned that the amount that do tend to gravitate towards the mindset coach, the psychologist, and that's certainly been the same at every club that I've been at that has actually had a psychologist on board. And I was certainly myself one of those people. And I think a lot of the questions I'm going to ask today are probably based on my own experience as much as anything, because I'm sure that, in fact, I know I'm not alone. I know you've written several books. I mean, the book that I wrote, and I did touch on a lot of these things that goalkeepers go through, and I was... Yeah. I was astounded by the amount of people that got in touch that say, I feel the exact same thing. And I never really knew they did until afterwards, because you kind of feel like you're on your own when you're going through those thoughts, feelings, emotions before a game, the nerves that you might get in the morning, the thoughts that can sometimes spiral and take you to a place that isn't necessarily the most productive place going into a game itself, which was why, you know, I tried to delve as heavily as I could during my career to try and give myself a chance at, not I say a chance of maximizing, almost a chance of enjoying at times, because I think you touched on it there, that it's a type of position where it is such a unique position. And I suppose an example that I'll give, and this actually happened to a goalkeeper I worked with very closely just the other day, where last minute of a game, he dived up into the top corner, got fingertips to it, and it's ended up going just inside the post. Now, on the back of that, he's ended up getting blamed by the coaching staff, by many people surrounding him. Yet, if it had gone the other side of the post, it genuinely would have been one of the best saves of the season. And no doubt, last minute of the game, he would have been the hero in saving a point for his team. But it is almost that everything or bust. You know, you're the hero or the villain. And with it being like that and being a bit of a roller coaster, you know, you make an error, it often leads to a goal. It's not like an outfield player that might misplace a pass and it goes out for a throw-in. It is the ultimate penalty. You know, you are giving away a goal which might cost your team for that particular game. And again, now I'm the one that's waffling and going off on a bit of a tangent. But with that being the case, when you're working with a goalkeeper, I'm assuming the ability to be able to let go of a situation, the ability to be able to move on and not necessarily get too sucked into both the positive and the negative, the plaudits and the criticism that you're going to get from game to game, must be a big thing that you work with a goalkeeper on.
Massively. I mean, goalkeepers and across the pitch, I'm passionate about one massive thing that I've learned over the last 15 years, and that's footballers, all sports people, but footballers need, in my opinion, a framework to the mental side of their game. They need a mental framework. They need a way of doing and being the mental side of the game. I think that's absolutely imperative, and I think it's missing. And again, I know this is a podcast about goalkeepers and we're going to talk about goalkeepers, but it really is across the pitch. There's some interesting things you've said already, Rich. I think it's a sad, sad world that we live in when coaches start blaming players for either mistakes they've made or, near misses or near genius saves. The feelings that you experienced and lots of players experience is indicative of a culture, a competitive culture that doesn't allow for vulnerability, that doesn't give space for players to have a conversation around their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, their bodily sensations. Again, we can get more into detail. I've got a lot of strong words to say about that. I think it's maladaptive. I think we live in a maladaptive competitive landscape. I think football is miles behind, like a lot of sports are behind on what the research tells us about human functioning, human possibility, human performance, absolute country miles behind. You know, so whenever coaches come out and start blaming players, I think is weak and poor coaching. I think it delivers on a power threat relationship that is harmful to players, their immediate performance, their capacity to learn, their capacity to engage, their future career. So as you can hear, it winds me right up, and I'm happy to have strong conversations about that. Getting back to your question, players need a framework to the mental side of their game. Everybody, every single player, every single goalkeeper needs to know exactly what they're going to do mentally to get into their best possible mindset and stay there no matter what, which is what you're kind of saying, which is if I make a mistake, if that mistake is actually not very discernible, which I think is kind of, you know, that's what I've learned about goalkeeping over the years, Rich, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is, you know, when people think about mistakes when it comes to goalkeepers, people think about, you know, the fumble, drop catch, you know, maybe even being in the wrong position or something like that. But what I've learned is mistakes can be tiny, tiny things. Tiny things that actually eat away at a goalkeeper's confidence. You know, you need a mental framework where if you get up in the morning and you're not feeling great, you've got a bit of lethargy, you've got a bit of doubt, you've got a bit of worry, you've got a bit of performance anxiety, you need to have the capacity to deal with that. So in summary, I would say all goalkeepers need a framework to the mental side of the game, how I'm going to get into my best mindset, what I would call a high performance mindset, HPM, H5P for performance, M for mindset, high performance mindset, and stay there no matter what, no matter what happens on the pitch, and nothing and no one takes me away from this HPM. That is a skill they need to develop, but that is lacking because, well, maybe it's just not been on offer historically. So that's what we can talk about.
Well, look, it fascinates me. I guess this then leads into the fact that so much of a, certainly when it comes from managers that will be, you're either the hero or the villain, a lot of it is emotional as opposed to like a process-driven approach. And I've found just from personal experience, those that have gone with a process-driven approach that will look at the game as a whole and look at this idea of continual improvement tend to go a little bit further in both management and as players. I think when players are able to take that on themselves and have a mentality of continual improvement and understand that some games you might do everything right but make an error, it just happens sometimes. And similarly, you know, it can go the other way from time to time as well. So I guess though, the bit that you're going, I'm intrigued by this framework, because then as much as it's the manager's prerogative in order to, or the manager's responsibility in order to be able to communicate effectively with their players to allow them that space to feel vulnerable and to express themselves as best they can, it's also then very much down to the individual. I always remember someone saying to me that, was it, he who angers you owns you? You know, that real feeling of empowerment and being able to dictate your own path to an extent. So I guess that then leads back into this framework in the, and again, I'm sure that we could end up doing a whole podcast on what this framework could look like. But what basic advice would you give to a goalkeeper when it comes to the framework? Would it touch on things pre-game, during the game, post-game? Are the tools or simple tools that they can do just to give them a slight improvement in this area?
Everything, really. I mean, I think the framework needs to be very much pre-game, during the game, post-game, because post-game, you probably want to create feedback loops, reflection on the framework. But let me, you know, look, it's a good question. Let's bring this alive for the audience here. Here's a very, very simple idea that I suppose that other people who have listened to other podcasts that I've done and people who've listened, maybe read some of my books and stuff, will know that one of the techniques I use regularly with players in all positions, but certainly with goalkeepers, is my technique of game face. A game face. I think every player needs what I call a game face. A game face. What a game face is, it's the personality you want to have on the pitch. It's the attitude you want to portray. It's your optimal mindset. It optimizes your physical state. It's essentially your confidence barometer as well. To explain further, I will give you an example of a game face, and then we will break that down. And this is an example of a game face from somebody who plays at the very top level of the game. So very, very top level. His game face, whenever he goes and plays, he strives to be brave, confident Edison. Brave, confident Edison. Brave, confident Edison. When I sat down with this player, I did what I always do with players to strive to help them develop this game face. I asked him about him at his best. Tell me about you at your best. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What do others see when you're at your best? So that question there taps into a player's memory. That's what you're doing when you ask them to think of them at their best. Pick a best game. You're getting them to tap into their memory of them at their best. You know, and Rich, you could probably think about your best games right now. And what are you doing? You're getting a picture or pictures in your head, perhaps a movie in your mind of your best games. And you might even get some feelings or sensations going through your body with relation to that. I might also ask another question, which would be tapping more into imagination. Tell me about your dream game. If you were to go out and play tomorrow and you play your dream game, a 10 out of 10 game, and look, let's have some fun here, an 11 out of 10 game, a 12 out of 10 game, what would that look like? What would that feel like? What would others see if you were playing your dream game? And what I'm trying to do, so I'm getting them to start to talk about their best game, their dream game. And what I'm then going to do is try to get some action-based words. I'm trying to elicit some action-based words from these players. Okay. Alert, alive, lively, relentless, sharp, upbeat, athletic, dominant, commanding, demanding. Action-based words, action-based words, words you can act, enact, be, and do. That's the crucial thing here. You know, a word like creative isn't great because you don't do creative, okay? Creative is as a consequence of, you know, some good play, I suppose. So you've got to be able to be and do and act these action-based words. And so this goalkeeper said to me, after thinking about it for a bit and after a bit of brainstorming and co-creating to me together, he said, I'm brave. I'm brave. I'm brave to come for catches. You know, I'm brave in my 1v1s. You know, what's he got? He's brave and confident. So he says, I'm confident. You know, I'm confident. I've got confident body language, brave and confident, brave and confident. You know, I'm confident to come for catches. I'm confidently commanding and demanding my penalty area. You know, I'm that nonstop, brave and confident, brave and confident. So once we've got a couple of key words, I might also expand to create what I would call a pictorial metaphor. And so I might ask a player to think of a model player that resembles those key words, or an animal or something like a lion or a leopard or a cheetah. I think that may or may not work well as a goalkeeper. But anyway, this player said to me, Edison. You know, Edison, Manchester City goalkeeper. You know, he said, brave, confident Edison. That he became brave, confident Edison. And this goalkeeper plays at a very top level. Whenever he walks out onto the pitch, he makes it his job to be brave, confident Edison. BC Edison, BC Edison. And so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, going into a Saturday game, he's thinking, my job on the pitch is to be BC Edison, brave, confident Edison. Nothing and no one's going to be taking me away from that. I'm going to be that every single second of the game. Every single second, my positioning goal, my set position, my catching, my 1v1, all the stuff I do as a goalkeeper that you guys know far more about than I do, right? I'm going to be doing that brave, confident Edison. So it's working as a blueprint going into a game. And then it's something he can be, do, and act. And the last thing to say about a game face, be, do, and act is a really important thing here. I think one of the big myths about sports psychology, or the big myths about mental skills, is that people think these things are from the neck upwards. People think that sports psychology or mental skills are from the neck upwards. What science is now demonstrating is that mental skills or sports psychology is from our head down to our toes, and our toes up to our head. We have to embody. We have to embody the game face. We have to be it and do it and act it with every inch of our body. We have to hold ourselves like that, present ourselves like that, walk around the penalty area like that, act it. And that's what this goalkeeper tries to do. Be, do, and act. Brave, confident Edison nonstop. That's a game face. And that can be a part of the mental framework that you might like to create.
Yeah. So, I love the idea of this. So you've got a young goalkeeper, let's say, listening to this podcast right now, and no doubt sat there with their pad and pen and making all sorts of notes. Now, so for someone that was going to do this initially, or go out there with this mentality of I am this, I am this, I am this, then 5 minutes in, they come to catch a ball and it doesn't quite work out. And then all of a sudden, some doubts might creep into their mind. What's the advice then? Is it then, because I mean, I hate the phrase fake it till you make it, but is there an element of that where it's at first, like any skill, any muscle, it takes time to build muscle. It takes time to improve that skill. Is it one where it's just a case of persisting?
I think it's several things, Rich. It's not so much fake it till you make it, although I'm not adverse to the notion of be it to become it, because again, there's increasing evidence within science to suggest the body has a huge influence on the mind, and that acting in a certain way can influence the kind of hormones we release, and thus makes a difference to the mental processes we experience. So I'm not averse to saying to somebody, go out there and just be brave, confident, Edison, be it, do it, act it. I'm not sure that's fake it till you make it. But look, the first thing to say here, Rich, is that I think it has to be a philosophical shift. By that I mean, I rarely work with a player when I start out with them, whereby that player is saying, Dan, I have a framework, I have a mental framework, and I'm putting that framework first. I'm taking that framework really seriously, and I'm putting it first when I go play. In fact, I've probably never worked with a player who said that. And by the time they've experienced working with me for a bit, they're putting it first. Because my argument is that mindset is going to be the first thing to go out there. It's the most fragile thing out there. And how you feel in your body, the sensations you have make a difference. And your capacity to manage how you feel, manage your emotions, manage your thoughts is the number one thing out there. And again, if you want me to go into detail about how the brain works and why that's the case, I'm very happy to. But take it as read at the moment that it's so important as a player, if you want to be the best that you can be, if you want to be more consistent, if you want to high perform more consistently under pressure, you have to put the mental side of the game first. When you do that, I'm answering it this way, Rich, because when you do that, you give yourself a better chance to be brave, confident, Edison, to be in your game face, whatever that game face looks like. You give yourself a better chance to catch when you have the kind of thoughts or feelings that take you away from being, let's say, brave and confident. When you make a mistake, or just when a thought emerges. So my first answer is take it seriously, create a framework, take it seriously, put it first, make it the number one objective. When you do, the technical, tactical, and physical sides of the game follow. That's not diminishing their importance. They're very important. I'm not saying they're not. What I'm saying is when you're out there in the heat of battle, it's managing yourself that is the most important thing and the most challenging thing in many respects. So that's the first thing. The second thing to say, you know, without going into enormous detail into what this framework can look like, because, you know, there's my books out there that you can have a look at. There's my online academy that is going to teach you how to do this. I will give you another technique here that I think goes hand in hand with game face. And relates to what you're saying. You're saying if a goalkeeper makes a mistake, let's say, and starts to think in a certain way, you know, how do they get back, you know, how do they get themselves back in the game? Now, I would call those thoughts ants, A-N-T-S, ants. And I think ants are the most destructive things that people, that players have on the pitch. Before I tell you what ants are, let me talk a little bit about how the brain works. Okay, so thoughts happen to you. Thoughts emerge. Okay, a bit of doubt, a bit of worry, a bit of anxiety. Those thoughts and feelings emerge. They happen to you. Okay, every player experiences negative thoughts. They're inevitable. Those negative thoughts are automatic. A for automatic, N for negative, T for thoughts. A-N-T. Ants. So let's take this elite player I spoke about earlier. His game face is brave, confident Edison. When we first sat down and we created this game face of brave, confident Edison, and he goes into every game and he puts brave, confident Edison first, every action, every motion, every movement, every single second of the game, he's going to be brave, confident Edison. He's going to hold himself like that. He's going to be it, do it, act it. he also knows, because we've talked about it a lot, that it is inevitable that he's going to have ants, automatic negative thoughts, because that's how our human brain and body function. These thoughts emerge. They pop into our head. Oh, I'm just not feeling it today. Oh, I feel flat and lethargic. I can't believe I made that mistake. Oh, I'm having a disaster. Gaffer's going to have a real go at me at halftime. I can't believe. And so on and so forth. And, you know, you can have ants when it goes for a corner kick. And you just, oh, not, you know, you have ants when a defender has a bit of a go at you. Ant pops out of nowhere for no reason at all. And then a free kick in a position that you feel like makes you feel uncomfortable. There's an ant. They pop into your head. Your job is to squash the ants. Your job is to squash the ants. And when you put mindset first, and when you make squashing ants a big deal, okay, you'll become quicker and quicker and quicker at squashing ants. When you have an ant, come back to your game face. When you have an ant, come back to your game face. Squash the ant, come back to your game face. Spot it, stop it, squash it. Spot it, stop it, squash it by coming back to your game face. Ants and game face work hand in hand. There we're starting to create a great, great framework. We've got something that helps us get into our best mindset. We got a blueprint of who we want to be on the pitch. And then when we do have a negative thought, feeling an ant, we know we got to squash that and come back to our game face. And the more you put that first, the more you make that important, the more you practice it in training and in games, the quicker you'll become at squashing your ants. That's what I'd say to your question.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think the fact that it gives, yeah, and you've broke it down in the way you have, and things that can be remembered so easily for any goalkeeper going into any game. It's not thousands of commands. It's a couple of key commands that can come to mind very quickly when those negative thoughts come in. I think it's excellent. I'm sure the young goalkeepers listening in will take a lot from that. One of the questions
I just interject there? Just last thing to say there, Rich, because I just think it's important to say, sorry, mate. I think it's important to say, you know, when I got involved in football 15 years ago, I realised pretty quickly, again, I wanted to learn language and the specific challenges that players face. And I got to learn pretty quickly that, look, players just need very simple ideas. Mm. Ideas that echo beyond their simplicity. You know, that have a raft of complexity underpinning, you know, those techniques, but simple techniques. And it's not a lie to say, I mean, this is an outfield player that I'm working with who plays at the highest of the high level, right, at a very top team. And he literally has a framework of game face and ants. He literally has, I think there's one other technique we have, but every time he's going into these massive, massive games, be in my game face, squash my ants. It can be as simple as that. And it has to be simple. Otherwise, it just becomes, well, I suppose it's obvious to say, it just becomes too difficult. So that, sorry, Rich, I interjected. That's what I wanted to say.
No, I love it. And the point being, and I always remember someone telling me this was, and I think this is along the same lines, is, you know, we're sat here in a room at the moment and I'm looking up and there's a light that's on. Now, when you switch a light switch, a light comes on. You don't necessarily question what has to happen for that light to come on. You don't think about how electricity flows or the wiring that's going on or anything like that. All you know is you press that and that happens. And it's kind of similar with this. There are some people that are going to want to dig a bit deeper and they might want to know why it has the outcome that it has. But essentially, as you say, you know, we could spend hours on here going into the real fine detail. But ultimately, what goalkeepers want, what all players want, is to know they can step out there 3 o'clock on a Saturday and they're in the state of mind they need to be in to give themselves the best chance of playing a good game of football. And essentially, that's the tools that you've just touched on there. You've done all the hard yards effectively for the player, for the goalkeeper, and brought it right back to the simple actions that can allow them to step out with confidence and knowing that they've got as good a chance as any to go out and play a good game. The question that I get asked a lot, and this is because, and I, you know, I work with in a slightly different capacity, but work with about 30 odd goalkeepers at the moment in different ways. And what I tend to find is, of course, there's so many different types of characters, different personalities. What you've just spoke about there, can it work for anybody? Or is it a case of some people you work with, they will pick it up a little bit quicker than others?
I almost feel you've asked me two different questions there, in as much as one's a personality thing and one's a cognitive capacity thing. So by that, I mean a sort of a mental processing thing. How quickly can somebody learn that? If I'm right in saying that, I'll answer the first one first, which is a personality or a character thing. The beauty of language, brave, confident Edison, sharp, relentless, a black, the Atletico Madrid goalkeeper. I've got a good goalkeeper I'm working with who is sharp, relentless, a black. Upbeat, focused, De Gea. Made that one up there, right? Or just a couple of key words. Sharp and dominant. Alert and alive. The beauty of language is it doesn't matter who you are, what personality traits you tend to enjoy, what kind of character you might be. You might be typically oriented towards being an introvert, or you might have extroverted tendencies. You might be quite assertive in the changing room. You might enjoy a lot of positive emotion as opposed to negative emotion. You might be highly agreeable, or you might be quite low agreeable. I'm quite passionate about personality science, so I'm quite into that side. It doesn't really matter, because this is all about creating your ideal persona through a pictorial metaphor, action-based words, and maybe a model plan that anybody can have. What I would say to your question is there's definitely some players. I mean, I have another technique called a match script that I first wrote about back in my first book, Soccer Tough, back in 2012. Which is more about breaking down your game into specific controllable plays rather than something like a pictorial metaphor. There are some players who prefer something like a script rather than a game face. But I haven't really come across many players who haven't enjoyed this idea of expressing themselves, creating a game face and expressing themselves in the game face. And as I'm sort of saying, the beauty of language, it doesn't matter who you are as a person, it doesn't matter what kind of personality you enjoy, you can have a game face because language can bend itself towards any kind of personality. In terms of my interpretation of what you're asking me in terms of, you know, players picking this up quickly, I just think everybody can pick it up. It's just how much time you're going to dedicate to this. You know, are you going to go into training and be brave, confident Edison, or sharp, alert Neuer, or whatever? You know, are you going to go and do it? Are you going to be it? Are you going to picture it every day? You know, are you going to, you know, live it from 2 o'clock for a 3 o'clock kickoff? You know, if you do that, I think you've got more chance of being successful with it. If it floats at the back of your mind and it may or may not be there, I think it may or may not emerge when you need it. So I do wonder if there's an element of ideally being all in and mediates whether you're actually good at it or not. That would be my opinion. But again, the beauty of it is, look, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, most of them have, you know, their favorite goalkeepers, for instance, their favorite players. Most of them will know words like positive and strong. You know, 9-year-olds can show you strong. They can play, act strong. They can play, act positive. They can play, act alert, and words like that. So this has a real all ages and all levels feel for it. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, mate, but it can fit into any character and it can be learned easily. It might just depend on your attitude towards it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to quickly jump in there, Dan, because a question I'd quite like to ask, and I don't know whether you have the answer for this, but you mentioned the brave, confident Edison, the sharp, relentless Oblak. Now, these are techniques being adopted by, as you said there, some of the goalkeepers at the highest level of the game. At what point do those goalkeepers, and it's great that that then makes them perform to their ultimate capacity, but at what point do those goalkeepers, and goalkeepers lower down, I suppose you could say, turn around and say, right, I'm no longer brave, confident Edison. I'm no longer sharp, relentless Oblak. I'm brave, confident me. I'm sharp, relentless me. Do you know what I mean? When do they actually, and is it important that they do eventually turn around and say, right, now I'm me. I'm gonna profess to be me, and actually I want other goalkeepers learning their trade to actually think that they're going to be a brave, confident me. Do you know what I mean by that?
100%. You're almost talking about an authenticity versus inauthenticity piece. And these are questions that I have often. These are conversations, I should say, that I have often. And it's about having an ongoing conversation with a player. And it's malleable. Matt, to be honest with you, it's a case of, you know, somebody might start sharp dominant or sharp relentless a black. I actually think it's sharp dominant a black now I think about it. And you know, then that player might say, you know what, I want to shift things to be sharp and dominant here, sharp and dominant, you know, because that I want to embody this and embed this into my game, and I want it to be me. I've got players who I'll sit down with from day one and they'll go, well, I don't really like the model player idea, because, Matt, of what you're suggesting there, because it might feel inauthentic to some people. They've said, I just want to be me. And then sometimes, so I work with a striker who is a very prominent striker in England, and his game face is sharp, relentless lion. Sharp, relentless line. He didn't like the idea of picking another striker. And he said, I love the idea. I love the animal idea. He had a bit of a chuckle about it. You know, it was a bit embarrassing to begin with. But then he said, no, Dan, you know what? I love that. I'm the lion. I'm the lion. This is my penalty area. You know, if I miss a few chances, I've got to continue to be that lion. Because this is the interesting thing about the brain, is it can work metaphorically. You know, it can wander into, you know, since we were children, our brain has worked like that, creatively, imaginatively. And our brain associates language with behaviors, with feelings, with bodily sensations. So when this player thinks about being confident, relentless lion, you could take the confident, relentless away, and he could just be a lion. Because to him, a lion is the king of the penalty area. There's a metaphor. The king of the jungle, the king of the penalty area. I don't care what opposition I'm up against, what defensive unit I'm up against. I'm the lion. And if I've missed every chance out there for 70, 80 minutes, I'm still going to be the lion. That was really important to him, because he obsessed scoring, as strikers do. And when strikers obsess scoring, they can get very frustrated with themselves. They can have frustrated ants, angry ants. And they've got to be able to squash those ants. So this player comes back to the lion. Now, excuse me, I've gone off on about strikers there. But the point being is that you can pick anything. You know, I've got players who have picked. I had one player, his best game that he ever had was against Liverpool. And I think his game face was something like upbeat, positive Liverpool. Because he wanted to go on the pitch and channel the thoughts, the feelings, the body language, the sensations, the movements, the runs, the actions, with relation to how he played against Liverpool. And so you can use any pictorial metaphor in that respect. But the beauty of words is that they're controllable, or as close to controllable as you can be. So Matt, it's a great question. I would say it's always got to be malleable. It's always got to be an ongoing conversation. By and large, I have found in my experience, at least, you know, of the 15 years I've been doing this, of 10 years I've been doing game faces tend to stay consistent, because there's something about, even if I play at the top level, I don't mind embodying Neuer or Black or De Gea or Edison or something. I don't mind that, because there might be something that they bring to the goalkeeping party that I don't do very well or don't do as good as them. That's fine. You know, I've got goalkeepers I've worked with that some of the best in the world, and they might try and model another golfer that they know very well, because that golfer tends to be better with their emotions than them, or tends to be more aggressive than them, or something like that. So that's the beauty of this, is it can be very, very malleable. You can come back to a couple of words, you can come back to one word, you can come back to something that's a little bit more esoteric, like being a brick wall. You can come back to a team you've played against. You can come back to the animal idea. Now, There is just one more thing that you said something interesting there, Matt, that I do want to say is that what I'm not saying for one second is that this is going to help somebody optimally perform. There is a difference between mind and performance. If I said, be in your game face, that's definitely going to help you optimally perform, that would be a fraudulent thing to say. Because if it wasn't being, it wasn't a fraudulent thing to say, I should be a multimillionaire by now. Because if I could help everybody optimally perform every single time, well, you know, I would be caked in it. And I can assure you, I'm not caked in it. So what this is about, and this is an important thing to say here, because I want people to understand, this isn't a sports psychologist coming along going, be dominant, relentless, a black, and hey, you're going to go and be 9 out of 10 every time. That's a ridiculous thing to say. Somebody who says that doesn't understand human functioning and doesn't understand the sporting landscape, the complexity of it. What I am saying is you give yourself, if you stay in your HPM, your high performance mindset, that can consist of your game face, you give yourself a better chance to high perform. You give yourself a better chance to have your best possible performance. That's the key, possible, your best possible performance. And on some days, that's going to be 9 out of 10. On other days, you're going to turn a 7 into an 8 out of 10. On other days, you might turn a 6 into a 7 out of 10, and so on and so forth. What I'm not saying is do this and you'll be 9 out of 10 every single time. That's ludicrous. But that's an important thing to say here.
And I guess actually from your perspective, and veering slightly off track here, as a sports psychologist, I guess in a way similar to how a manager might say, you know, I can work with these players all week, but once they cross that white line, it's ultimately on them. Yes, I can slightly influence the game from the touchline and I can change tactics and I can make substitutions, but it is on the players. For you as a sports psychologist, when you work with these players, is that also something that I guess you have to get across? Because I don't know whether this has happened to you before, but if a player might come back to you, a goalkeeper might come back to you and say, well, hang on a second, you told me to be brave, confident, Edison, you told me to do this, 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 and this, and I didn't have a very good game. So now what?
I think every single feedback loop put in place needs to revolve around performance and mindset. Let's apply some intelligence here. When players walk out onto the pitch, let's strip this back. There is an outcome. There is a performance. There is a mindset. There is an outcome, a performance, and a mindset. We are so socialized in sport, in football, into outcome and performance. Outcome and performance, outcomes. Got to win, got to win, got to win. Got to perform, got to perform, got to perform. That we tend to ignore mindset. And obviously we've spoken for the last 40 minutes about what that mindset and mindset framework can look like. But we've got to put feedback loops in place around both performance and mindset. I don't mind if a player comes off the pitch and says, Dan, you know, my performance was 6 out of 10 today. It was 7 out of 10. It was 5 out of 10. I also want a feedback around mindset. Give me a mark out of 10 for your mindset. In that way, I can have a really good conversation with a player. If he or she says, well, my performance was down at 6 and my mindset was 7. Because then we can start to look at why so high, why as high as 7 for mindset? You know, what went well mindset-wise? What needs to go better next week with mindset? What would 8 or 9 out of 10 for mindset look like? What would you be doing? And we can relate that to the 6 out of 10 performance. Well, if you put in an 8 or 9 out of 10 for mindset, do you think that might have nudged it up a bit for performance? You know, might you have been a bit sharper, you know, a little bit better with your set positions, a bit better here, there and everywhere, and all the stuff you think about as a goalkeeper? It's probably the case you would do. But you've got to put in feedback loops around mindset and performance. I think that's absolutely crucial. The outcome's the outcome. That just takes care of itself. And that's a separate issue. But the main thing here is looking at, you know, having some feedback loops around mindset. And that doesn't really happen in the professional game. I very, very rarely have I ever seen a coach who really has a constructive conversation around mindset every week the same feedback loops around mindset. I think I'm not 100% sure if I'm answering your question here, Matt, but I think you've got to put in both. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that this is the antidote that gives you a perfect performance every single time. And of course, the onus is on the player. You know, let's have a good conversation. If we're going to sit down, we're going to start working on a game face, and we're going to talk about ants, and we're going to talk about other techniques. Of course, that player now has the techniques. That player now has to go and use those techniques. But to help that player use those techniques, we've got to put feedback loops in around those techniques. You know, we can't just ignore it from now on. For that part of the improvement process is having good conversations moving forward around how well they executed those techniques. And that's why it's got to be first going into a game. They've got to go out there and execute it during the game. And then after the game, we have good conversation around mark out a 10 for performance, mark out a 10 for mindset. Let's have a good conversation then. Then we have a better chance to improve it. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. And you have answered the question. I find that element of it fascinating. And that's why I guess I wanted to ask it, because, you know, I don't know whether you've had that. Well, you kind of did say that you have had that experience before. And you mentioned managers as well there and coaches. And you've worked with some great names over the years, Eddie Howe, Steve McLaren, Eddie Jones, to name but a few. In terms of resistance, and it is changing now, the concept of sports psychology is very much changing now. It's very prevalent in football now. But have you met resistance over the years, and do you still meet resistance from managers, from parents, from whoever it may be, and think that, you know, you've used a lot of acronyms here and we're talking about ants and we're talking about a game face, which Rich and I can really buy into and many people listening to this podcast can really buy into. But I imagine there are still people out there, especially some of the old school, who listen to that and go, oh, that's a load of old mumbo jumbo.
And they're welcome to think that if they want. I suppose you're going to have varying attitudes towards various elements of the game. Look, I think, and also I'm very mindful, and I'm mindful today that I'm being quite vociferous on this program. I'm being quite strong with my words, and I've been a coach. I was a golf coach. Coaching, you know, there is a caveat here where coaching is one of the toughest professions or hobbies you can engage in. You know, you're dealing with different people's hopes, doubts, wants, beliefs, expectations, values, and personalities and experiences, and so on and so forth. It's enormously challenging. So, you know, if anybody's frustrated or offended by my strong tone, then you just see it as my passion for this. And I'm willing to engage even the biggest skeptic around this. And maybe sometimes I can't persuade, and that's fine. That's okay. I think we live in a free country, and we don't live in a totalitarian regime where everybody has to do the same thing. Everybody's got to have a game face. That's fine. That's no problem. I think for me, it's not so much skepticism that I come across, especially, you know, you've named names of coaches who work at the adult elite level. I think what we're trying to do in sports psychology and in coaching together is trying to work out the best possible way in which we deliver sports psychology. Psychology, the psychosocial, the biopsychosocial, bio is in biology, the biopsychosocial, and social includes environmental, economic, political landscapes. These are complex, they're broad and they're deep. They're broad and they're deep. And so it's enormously challenging to make sense of some of these areas. And it can be enormously challenging in terms of, well, how do I deliver this? How does this work? How do we do this? How do we do this in training? And so on and so forth. And so I think that even with some of the names that you've mentioned, and obviously it would be unethical for me to go into detail, you know, you've mentioned some coaches I've worked with who are great names and they're great people and they're great coaches. I think even for them, they're trying to make sense of how they deliver psychosocial. Is it the psych who does this? How much does the psych do? Should it be with and through coaches? If it's with and through coaches, what does that look like? Should a psych deliver presentations? You know, if so, at what age is that from? Do we orient everything around performance, or should psychosocial mainly be about learning? Is it both? You know, there's a lot of questions out there, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, we can talk about the very adult elite level, but then you've got a lot of resources there. What about grassroots on a wet Wednesday night? You know, how do they do it then? You know, they can't afford a sports psychologist. How do they do it? So it's more, I find these days, it's not so much the skepticism around psychology is or isn't involved. It's more about, well, how do we do this? How do we do this? And how do I, as a coach, have the space to do this? And that's, I suppose, what I've worked over the years to try to create techniques that even the coach who's at the most time poor and doesn't have any money to spend on a sports site can go and deliver on a game phase, can go and help players squash ants in a rondo, a keep ball, a small sided game, and so on and so forth. That's how I've tried to do it. That's, I think, where there's a bit of skepticism. And I think even at the very top level, even with your household name coaches, they're still slightly scratching their heads, slightly wondering how they do it. And there is still an element with the very leading coaches that would say, well, I'm the psychologist. I do this. I'm the one who, and absolutely, they do psychology within their role. I don't think any of them would want to be sports psychologists because that's a different job to being a manager. You know, I do a lot of things as a sports psychologist that they wouldn't want to do. They can't do. They're not qualified to do, and they just don't have time to do. Right. But I just think we're still trying to work out how best this is delivered at all ages, at all levels, in the healthiest, safest possible way.
Fantastic. Dan, we are coming towards the end of this interview. I could talk about this for another couple of hours. Now, normally, the final question, and we ask it to every single guest, is what has goalkeeping given you? And as you can imagine, the goalkeepers or goalkeeper coaches will give all sorts of different answers on this. But of course, slightly different for you, given that you mentioned at the start of the podcast, as much as it was, it sounds like an eventful few games that you played in goal. I'm not going to ask that question. But what I am going to ask is, look, people know that I champion this type of thing. For me, I think that again, as I said at the very start, you look at the goalkeepers who are playing at the very top level, and when we touch on their body language, the way in which they bounce back from mistakes, their mentality in general, it does differentiate them from goalkeepers who aren't maybe playing at that level. So rather than me ask what has goalkeeping given you, I'm going to ask just for you to, I guess, give an idea about what you could give to goalkeepers, because no doubt there'll be a few listening into this now and they'll be Googling your name or looking you up or buying your books, but no doubt one or two will be in touch. So what can you, Dan Abrahams, give to goalkeepers?
I can help them establish the right framework for them, which I think is vital. Look at it this way, Rich. Let me answer this in a slightly richer and deeper way. I'm passionate about three things. I think coaches and players are invested in three P's: participation, progression, and performance. Participation, progression, and performance. I think every coach on the planet and every player on the planet, especially every player, is invested in these three areas. Participation is engagement, engaging with the game, enjoying the game, engaging it in a healthy, safe, fun way with well-being in mind, and so on and so forth. The progression piece is learning the game, learning effectively, improving, growing, developing as a player, building skill. And then the performance piece is that competitive piece, which ultimately is having that framework. I can help as a sports psychologist. I'm deeply embedded in the footballing landscape and have been for 15 years in helping players participate, progress, and perform. In helping coaches to help players participate, progress, and perform. If I'm invited into a club, I'm looking at those three Ps and the wealth of things underneath those three Ps. If I get contacted by a player, I'm invested in helping them with those three Ps. We might orient towards whichever one they're specifically interested in, specific challenges that they face. But I think really when you break it down, participation, engagement, progression, learning, growing, and performance, competing, having that framework, high performing consistently under pressure. So whether it's through my books, whether it's through my academy, whether it's one-to-one, whether it's with a team, that's what I can offer.
Dan Abrahams, thank you very much for joining us. So we said we were going to go deep. Wow, we went really deep. That was a lesson and really fascinating. Such incredible insight there from Dan. And like we said at the top, speaking to an actual sports psychologist, it was very different the way that it came across. You know, we've done some great podcasts with the likes of Carl Hakimi, with Tom Heaton, with David Ford, talking about psychology, spirituality, meditation. But to actually speak to a qualified sports psychologist and just get his perspective on it, just so good.
Yeah, really, really good. And I think the bit for me, and we touched on it a lot during the podcast, was having the tools in order to use them in games. Because, do you know, I find myself, I'm guilty of this sometimes, and that I can talk mindset all day. And I do it with a lot of the goalkeepers I work with. We talk about different ideas and explore different ideas, and you can go here, there, and everywhere. But to actually break it down into some simple rules, some simple tools that you can then use in your game, I think is essential. And Dan's got that down to a T. I think I gave the example during the interview about a light switch. And I use that one a lot in that you don't question how the light comes on when you flick the switch. You just know that you flick the switch and light comes on. And I think that's what Dan was touching on. What he does and what he does so brilliantly is to break these things down so that you don't need to know why. You don't need to know how the brain functions necessarily. You just need to know that if you do these certain things, you're going to get the outcome that you desire.
The framework. You know, every goalkeeper needs it. Getting into that high performance mindset, HPM, you know, ants, spot it, stop it, squash it. It was the way that he communicated as well, the way that sometimes, I'm sure you noticed, he repeated what he was saying, but maybe just said it in a slightly softer tone the next time. So it was the way that he was communicating it just to us as well. But those acronyms that we spoke about, you know, sometimes it was getting a bit technical, but it's still all made sense. And that's what he does with his goalkeepers as well. You know, the BC Edison, brave, yeah, confident, Edison, sharp, relentless, Oblak. It's all those techniques that he uses with his goalkeepers.
I think what a lot of the listeners will find interesting is that my guess is that you guys probably do certain things already without even knowing it. You know, I think back to when I played, I had a few key words that I would use during the game. If I felt myself maybe feeling a bit lethargic, I would then try and get myself pumped up a little bit, start talking to myself, literally talking to myself to get myself pumped up. Likewise, vice versa, if I was a little bit too hyped up, try and relax myself to get myself back into that state of mind. What he does, though, is actually makes you understand it that little bit better. And as you say, things like that, BC Edison as a good example, where if you've got that going through your mind, and again, you're living that, that is going to make such a difference. I thought that was very, very good. And you touch on things like, yeah, ants, all the acronyms. They are important because, look, the other thing, and I'm sure, you know, I know we went into depth on this, is that this kind of stuff, you hear it once, and I've got no doubt a few of you guys now are buzzing after listening to that. But the mind is like any muscle in that you have to continually use it, have to continually listen to this kind of stuff, learn this kind of stuff. You know, you might feel confident for a period of time, but it is then something that you do every single day. I think what was the quote that I heard that always stuck with me? I say that, I'm going to get the quote wrong now, but it was motivation is like showers. If you don't have it every day, you begin to stink, along those lines. So it's the same kind of idea with this, in that actually it is something you need to continually do. Don't just think that you read a book and now you know about mindset, because I promise you, you will soon go back to your own ways. Your mind will soon go back to the old ways unless you continually keep moving forward and learning this kind of stuff. And I just felt there that, yeah, so thankful to Dan for offering that to us, but so many useful bits of information there. Certainly for you young goalkeepers, I'd even recommend listening to it again and again, because I think he's given so many different points there. Really get those ingrained into your mind.
Yeah, and lastly, just the key thing that I wanted to speak to him about was the fact, and I put this question to him, and he said, you know, ants still exist regardless of your game face. Now, I am here to give you a better chance, but I cannot guarantee that you are going to be a 10 out of 10. You know, you could be a 6, a 7, an 8 out of 10, etc. But it's not like you're going to read these books or listen to this podcast and suddenly go, right, well, that's it. I'm a complete goalkeeper, because everything will still exist. It's just about putting that framework in place to make you improve.
That's exactly it. Because look, and you can give so many examples of this, it is continually stretching your comfort zones, continually moving forward. Now, one of the biggest things you'll find that will stop you from doing that is distraction. And I say this quite often, and distraction can come in many forms. And often when a goalkeeper has a poor game and maybe gets too into their head, is the expression I'd use, and isn't necessarily in a state where they can move forward and learn, then if anything, you can lose days. You can lose days where you're worried about a mistake or a bad performance. Whereas with all of these different tools and techniques, ultimately, as long as you are motivated every day to improve whatever it is that you can offer and try and maximize your potential, and you're finding ways to tweak and improve your game state every single day in whatever way you're doing it, then you're moving forward. You're getting closer to maximizing your potential. Now, does that guarantee a good performance? No, absolutely not. You can feel fantastic and have a bad day. It happens to everyone. Likewise, you can feel dreadful and have a really good performance. Sometimes you don't necessarily get the result that perhaps you deserve in that moment. But what I can guarantee you, and certainly no doubt having listened to what Dan said, what I can guarantee you is that providing you keep moving forwards, you keep improving, you keep working on these little 1% and these little things you can do to improve what you offer, you will have far more good games than bad games. I can guarantee you that.
That you will. And if you want to find out more about Dan, head over to his website, danabrahams.com. He's on Twitter too, at danabrahams77. His books, Soccer Tough, Soccer Tough 2, Soccer Brain, Golf Tough. You can also get a free mental toughness ebook on football if you head over to his Twitter. It is the pinned tweet that will lead you to his website, danabrahams.com, on Twitter at danabrahams77. Thoroughly enjoyed this one, Richard.
Likewise, fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers
away.